This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, Manfred Mann with Pretty Flamingo. You are on the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. And for today, a bit of Culture's Cam Razlan just sitting in to offer his thoughts on a variety of things.
Got nothing else to do, why not?
You know, and we welcome you. We welcome you to the space. Okay, so for our first story of the hour, we're going to be talking about the development of rural areas. At a convention called The Rise of the Asian Tiger, Rural Development Minister Rina Harun called for the diversification of the rural economy to prevent excess migration to urban cities, which I think is pretty much what we're seeing nowadays.
So she said economies in these areas rely heavily on the activities of the Bumiputra, but government needs to improve infrastructure and offer business opportunities and alternative income sources. Now, Deputy Economic Affairs Minister Razie Jidin mirrored what the Prime Minister had earlier said and spoke about how the Bumiputra community, in his opinion as a whole, was somewhat inexperienced in economics and the management of money. This led to many lost economic opportunities.
So this was something that we wanted to talk about primarily because every time we discuss issues such as the congestion, right, of how things are in urban spaces, we also have to talk about how urban spaces are often the ones that are offering opportunities, right, for the bulk of people in terms of earning potential, in terms of participating in a variety of jobs. And so we thought it would be a good idea to kind of discuss it. Just what would it take for that kind of diversification of the rural economy to happen?
Well, Malaya is an urban society. The migration has always been from rural to urban. It's the case in all industrialized and post-industrialized nations.
No, I agree with that, but don't you think that there is room?
Don't
you think there's room for that to change?
There's no country where you can. In Italy, in Sicily, they are giving away villages, houses, because people are getting older and there's no one living there. In Japan, the same thing. People migrate from the countryside to the city.
And you see no interest or value whatsoever in trying to change that a little bit.
If there were a reason, it would be purely political because of the way that the voting boundaries are set out. It's weighted to the rural community. But actually, culturally, economically, the rural society has not really been that important in the history of Malaysia. It's about small towns. It's about the coastal areas.
Well, actually, I just want to tie that into something that we talked about previously on the show, which seems unrelated, but I think says something about the sentiment of people who move to the city, right? And we were talking about domicile-based voting and how it would involve really a lot of people kind of changing their original addresses from their hometowns to reflect where they currently live and to vote based on that. And the arguments for that are, of course, that you are actually voting in the place where you live and therefore voting for the issues that affect you where you live. And that is what makes sense, as opposed to, you know, you haven't lived somewhere for 20 years, but you're still able to affect what happens there. A lot of people did express a measure of uncertainty with that, though, saying that they still feel connected to their hometowns and where they came from. And I think that there is value there in trying to provide job opportunities, in trying to provide a way to make a living without having to migrate to a city.
Don't get me wrong. I think that it would be great if it can be pulled off. It's just that I've not seen it be pulled off anywhere. And I'd really like to see an example somewhere. I mean, you have countries...
We could be that example.
Well, you have countries like, say, France, where the countryside is very important. The produce that comes from the countryside is very important to them. But even then, they're still begging for young people to go and work in the countryside, even when it's heavily subsidized, because young people are naturally drawn to the cities. I mean, all of P. Romney's movies, contemporary movies, are about that basic phenomenon. And they're still popular to this day. People still understand the jokes.
But don't you think there'll be a change then where the trend will be reversed, right? Because I think in Japan, there is the trend where, well, city life is way too much for me. I'm just going to go back to the rural areas and start farming.
Well, I don't know about farming, but there is a trend in the reverse in retirement.
Okay.
So when you get to a certain age, not necessarily even retirement, you have a certain amount of money and you move to the countryside. So one industry which I could personally see doing well would be retirement communities, where especially if you go outside where the land is cheaper, in faraway Pahang somewhere, and you could build a large community there with housing, with good health care, with, you know, golf course, etc. Could be expensive to stay there, but if you can also make it so that it's affordable for people to retire there, then that's an industry and that would employ a lot of people. The Florida kind of model.
I get it. But I like to think that there are opportunities for younger people to still want to go back and participate in economies in their hometowns, even if those were more rural areas. And we want to hear from you. If you're not from KL, where's your hometown? Would you like to be able to kind of go back and work there, make a living there? And what would it take for you to be able to do that? Call us, let us know. 7733 2900 is that number. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be speaking shortly with Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, so keep it here for that. In the meantime, a bit of Simon and Garfunkel with Feeling Groovy. BFM 89.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. And for today, our guest host, Cam Razlan, here to just weigh in on any number of issues, really.
Thank you. Good.
Hello. Okay, so we've been talking about a call put out by Rural Development Minister Rina Harin for the diversification of the rural economy to prevent excess migration to urban cities. And to sum it up, really, Cam just doesn't think it's possible. Cam wants us to Florida-ize.
I encourage it. I think it's a great idea. I just don't think it'll happen.
Right. And Kelvin?
I'm on the end that I think if enough is done, we can achieve it.
Right. And I just believe that people would want to.
Yeah.
I think that there is a desire to be able to contribute in some tangible way in your hometown that doesn't impoverish you in the process. And so if we can get there, I believe that people would want to. But let us know if we're right. I mean, if you're not from KL, where's your hometown? Would you like to be able to go back and, you know, make it work there, make a living there? And what would it take for that to happen? Let us know. That number to call is 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We are receiving some messages which we will get to in just a little bit, but first up we have on the line Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia Europe Institute at the University of Malaya. Prof, thanks for joining us. So in developed countries, people often prefer living in often rural suburban areas. How can we develop rural areas here so that they're more attractive for people to live in?
You must have access and fairly quickly access to basic utilities, health. You must have health, and you should not have any utility problems of power, water. And you can have speed trains, provided you can ensure that less accidents and it doesn't cause other kinds of problems like noise pollution and so on. These things can be dealt with, or even the purification of air, which the Chinese are doing now with using air purifiers. So these are things that we can consider. And you have to also make sure that the state absorbs some of the cost, at least initially. This is important because in the end, you will see that there will be less jams and so on. There will be less transaction costs will be that much less. Lead times involving orders and delivery of services and goods will be that much faster. It will be reflected in the economy, not necessarily directly, but indirectly. That's the job of public good, public utilities. In one way, we are doing that. If you look at YB Gobind Singh Deo's ministry, they are looking at extending broadband to digitalize access that not only allows people to communicate, but also to appropriate knowledge. And appropriate knowledge from the dissemination, the flows of knowledge through broadband digitalized systems, but also to appropriate whichever agent that is there, people can be creative to participate that in, and in that way connect with knowledge nodes like those in the universities, public labs and so on, so that they can actually participate and generate innovatively new ways of doing things, including to even improve the way we live here.
Can measurements and definitions of development differ among different areas, especially between rural and urban places? In other words, should rural areas aspire to become urbanized?
The important point here is if you are using only income, it may not really reflect very much. Sometimes the urban dweller is worse off compared to the rural dweller. The rural dweller may have land and may have access to the planting of basic needs, food crops and so on, something that the urban dweller relying on just wages may not have. The rural dweller, again, could be residing in a place where he or she doesn't have to pay rent because the place may belong to the person, as compared to a person in the urban area. But at the same time, the urban dweller has better access to schools, has better access to hospitals, and many other services that may be seen as essential, including power and water, clean water, compared to the rural dweller. So in terms of measurement, I think one concept that I would welcome to be applied rather than used in a very rhetorical sort of way is inclusive development measures. It's like the in thing now. Unfortunately, most works that tend to study methodologically inclusive development, they define it correctly by simply saying clearly that it requires the participation of the targeted masses in policy making. But in reality, they don't do that. In reality, they only look at indicators of what constitutes poverty or what constitutes standards of living. So long as they are met, they assume that somehow there's a link with inclusive development. In reality, no.
So what's the correct way to do it? And how does inclusive development play a role in determining what sort of development should take place in an area?
This is why I use the term inclusive development in the way the concept has been defined. We can have a framework on how rural development should take place, but we need to go with an open mind to those constituents in those locations, speak to them and use language that's not typical of scientists. Use language that relates to what and how anthropologists communicate with people to understand why people do certain things certain times in a way where you actually participate in storytelling so that they actually then, using the kind of know-how that they have, the kind of capacity, capability they have to inform you about whether the strategies that you have are actually exchanged with them so that they are actually participants and they are aware these things can bring whether good or bad for them. So it is only through those interactions you will be able to actually identify, and it may vary from location to location. You may then end up saying, well, we should not build this dam because people down here would love to see that the hunting is not disturbed, the fauna and the flora that they want should be there. Or sometimes they may want it if the right sort of awareness is created. In the end, they should then decide on eventually what sort of projects will be good for them because they are the constituents of those locations.
And who forms the bulk of the rural folk in the country at the moment?
The thing is, we need to distinguish people who are outside towns but in modern locations, like in the state of Selangor, as opposed to those who are located in Pahang, Terengganu, Kelantan, and Sarawak and Sabah, where sometimes you might take a trip, say, to the border by Ansikong, you'll find people quite distant and detached from modern infrastructure. I think it is this set of people that you... And they are not small in numbers, because in Sarawak and Sabah, they're fairly big. And also, you have the Aboriginal people, too, in Peninsula. You need to see how their livelihoods are moving.
And how do you see the trend develop in the coming years in terms of migration between rural and urban areas?
I mean, we have huge amounts of foreign labor here, both legal, especially illegal labor, based on what our Honorable Prime Minister mentioned, that he even alluded to some communities even exceeding local communities in numbers. The question is more to do with whether they will be going back. I think we cannot stop rural-urban migration simply because if you look at the whole scenario in the world, urbanization has never been reversed except for some locations where you see ghost cities emerging, and that's largely because certain economic activities die down when say, certain minerals finish or certain kinds of activities evaporate and no longer important, then those towns become ghost towns. Now, other than that, the world, in fact, even Malaysia, we are expected to become even more urbanized. I think now I think about 80%, I can't remember now, of the Malaysian population is urbanized, and we are expected to urbanize more. So in that sense, the question now really is, should we really reduce intentionally rural-urban migration? My own feeling is, we should make living in rural areas comfortable. That even includes those whom we refer to as haves as opposed to have-nots. Those who are advantaged over those who are disadvantaged, preferring to live outside towns. I myself like to live outside towns, but I haven't simply because it will take that much longer for me to get to work. So I think those things need to be done, but I'm not sure whether we should really prevent completely urbanization. I think we shouldn't tamper with the natural flow of things, except that we should provide the opportunities for people to make a decision as to where they want to live.
Prof, thanks for sharing your perspective with us. That was Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute at University Malaya. And so we've been wanting to hear from you because this question about the rural diversification of economy, it really comes down to who's going to diversify it, right? And
yep.
If that happens, are people actually going to want to stay? Are people actually going to want to participate in that economy? So we wanted to know, if you're not from KL, Where's your hometown? Where were you from? Would you like to go back and be able to make a living there? And what would it take for that to be able to happen for you? You can call 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. And Alvin says this.
Segamat Johor. That's where they're from. Too bad less job opportunities there.
Yeah, it always comes down to job opportunities. Toby says, I'm from Penang. And yes, I'd love to move back there if even 80% of my current wages in KL could be met. Toby, write back and let us know what industry you're in. I'm curious to know because whenever I go back to visit my parents' hometowns, I always wonder whether my parents themselves would have been able to make a living there, right, in the industries that they chose. And more often than not, the answer seems to be no. We've also got this from Sivan, who is talking about the traffic woes and town planning issues in Kuala Lumpur, as well as the surrounding valley and urban sprawl. Putrajaya didn't make things much better. Government offices moved out so that office workers, but many had settled close to the government offices that were in KL in the first place. And so then you commute to Putrajaya and that forms part of the traffic, which means that the move to Putrajaya really didn't do all that much. Towns require, you know, towns need to be built to satisfy the population, for people to work, be entertained, send their kids to school, parks, shops, buy their groceries, and, you know, have a community where they belong, only having to travel to work within a 5-kilometer radius. Instead, we're all chasing rainbows, achieving little to nothing. I, by default, live in Klang currently. I work in Subang. To be at work at 8, I leave my house around 6:20. I'm at work by 7:10. I wake up a little before 5 a.m. to meet that target. And the return home takes 1 to 2 hours, reaching home by 6 to 7 or even later, especially on rainy days. Sorry to hear that, Sivan, especially today. Is it worth my trouble? I'm also paying toll for time.
Yeah, I think the messages that are coming across, it seems like, you know, they'd be happy to stay in their hometowns or where they're originally from, so long as there are job opportunities, and some are willing to take a pay cut just to meet that, right?
Yes. Also, Wenhao has sent us a very specific message here about what it would take for them to be able to move.
For the diversification of rural development, a youth retention strategy has to be first drawn up. Number one, grants can be offered to young entrepreneurs who have good business plans. Number two, we need to recognize the cultural space in urban centres that is much more interesting. So we need to beef up, especially the space, as young people today tend to be highly educated with different socializing needs as compared to the previous generations. Number three, encourage a cosmopolitan atmosphere in the rural areas rather than curbing it. Number four, make sure the living cost in rural areas is more affordable than urban centers. And lastly, make sure rural areas or smaller towns offer a lifestyle that's different from KL. And lastly, access to basic facilities, good education, and safety is a must.
Keep those messages coming. You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.